From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Imagine growing up in a world during a time in which it's prudent to hide the fact that you're Jewish because you might be barred from common public spaces or forced to attend schools that keep you apart from non-Jewish Germans. Your neighbors know of your heritage and they stop speaking to you, afraid to associate with you anymore. Then imagine the Nazis seizing your family's business, your parents plotting your escape, and before you reach friendlier soil, you watch through hotel curtains as Nazi soldiers and members of the SA or Hitler Youth loot and destroy Jewish-owned establishments. Alfred Schnoog escaped from Nazi Germany the morning after Kristallnacht. This November marks its 80th anniversary, also known as the Night of Broken Glass. He remembers that night and the morning after when his family boarded a train, hoping to get across the border to Holland. Today, as we consider Holocaust Remembrance Day, which begins at sunset on this Wednesday evening, we meet Alfred Schnoog and hear about his family's escape from Nazi Germany, how they almost didn't get past German border guards, and what it was like to arrive in the United States with no knowledge of the English language. Alfred Schnoog, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you very much, Rachel. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's an honor and a pleasure to have you with us today. And also here is Anita Schnoog, Alfred's wife, and we are, Mrs. Schnoog, you are here to occasionally prompt Mr. Schnoog in the event that there are lapses in dates about memory or words or that sort of thing.
That's right.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Mrs. Schnoog.
My pleasure.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. Do you have questions about his escape from Nazi Germany, what it was like to be an immigrant in the U.S. who doesn't speak English, what it was like to live in a country as a child in which you're not considered an equal citizen? You can reach us during this live Wednesday discussion at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Alfred Schnoog, so we're going back now to the 1930s in Cologne, Germany. Did you have friends as a child who were not Jewish?
Well, I didn't have friends in 1930 because that was the year of my birth, actually. So it took a little while before I had friends. But as a young man, yes, we had friends with children of our neighbors, and we had friends with children of our acquaintances, most of whom were Jewish. But they were, you know, we were like normal children. We were playing with other children in the neighborhood and having a happy time.
At what point do you remember needing to maybe hide the fact that you were Jewish?
Well, it was difficult at the time for Jews because there was a lot of anti-Semitism even before Hitler came into power. But when Hitler came into power in 1933, things became rather difficult. And we, shortly after the Nazis promulgated the Nuremberg Laws, it became absolutely necessary to hide our Jewishness. And there were many occasions where we were told by our parents that we had to be cautious about revealing the fact that we were Jewish.
Would have grown up with that, because you're saying if 1933 is a marker then.
Yes, oh, definitely.
You would have been 2 years old at that point.
I was 2 years old, although I perhaps didn't understand everything that was going on, but we certainly learned from our parents how we had to deal with the rest of the society and the rest of the people that we knew. Shortly after the Nuremberg Laws came out, the Nazis put up or ordered signs to be put up. The sign said, Juden sind hier unerwünscht, and that means Jews here are not wanted. And it had little meaning for us, but it was explained by our parents that we had to be cautious. Wherever we went and whatever establishments we entered where that sign was posted, and that sign was almost, it was ubiquitous. It was everywhere that I can remember.
What did being cautious mean to you as a young child? What did that mean? What were you afraid might happen?
Well, of course, we were curious about that. Why can't we do this? My twin brother and I asked that question. And we were told that that we were not really liked, that we had to be careful about letting people know that we were Jewish. We actually wound up living an undercover life where we had to hide everything that was associated with Jewishness. And you could feel it because we sensed at that time, and as we got a little older when we were 3, 4, 5 years old, we noticed that the people that lived across the hall from us, for instance, who had been close friends or at least very hospitable, suddenly they were shying away from associating with Jews or with us. And of course, it was because we were Jewish that they were.
And was that the same family in which the patriarch, the man, was a member of the SA? Which, according to the Holocaust Remembrance Museum, defines it as, you're going to be able to pronounce it better than I am, can you say that
Sturm?
Word?
Storm?
Sturmbeteiligung?
The Schutzabteilung.
The stormtroopers, or the, essentially, the...
Sturmabteilung?
Assault detachments.
The SAs?
Yes.
The SA, the Sturmabteilung?
Yes. So this man across the hall,
is that a
different family?
He was a civilian. I've forgotten what his position was. But when they'd come home, usually in the evening before 1933, or even 2 or 3 years after, they were still very friendly to us. And then suddenly they didn't want to have any association with us. And what was the reason? Well, we were Jewish, and it was dangerous for them to be known as associating with Jews.
How did your parents explain that to you as a child?
Well, they explained, obviously, that there was a lot of anti-Semitism. They didn't want us to be involved in any situations that would be embarrassing or that would cause difficulties for us or our family. And so they said, you have to understand them. They can get into trouble themselves. If they were known to be associating with Jews, they'd have a difficult time. So this is what happened. When we went to stores, for instance, and my mother, we had at that time rationing because of foodstuffs were difficult to get, and we had close relationships with the storekeepers, and so they knew we were Jewish, but they let us know, let my parents know in no uncertain terms, that they will help us, they will with whatever we needed, they would honor our ration cards, but prefer that if we came, that we not say anything when we were in the store, that kind of thing.
And there was a point when you learned that a man across the hall in your apartment building was a member of the SA, and this was a guy who had been friendly with you. You're shaking your head.
Yes, and, because I don't think that that's true. I don't know how that got in there.
Okay.
The man across the hall was just a neighbor.
Okay.
And I don't know whether he was part of the SA.
Okay. I pulled that from an interview that you did with the Holocaust Remembrance Museum. So that might have been a detail.
That was quite a long time ago.
It was a very long time ago, yes. So can you talk about the way Nazi children treated you? Because you did have, you had to be cautious around other children that you knew were the children of Nazis.
Oh, yes. After 1933, Jews were not allowed to attend school with Aryan children. And so we had to establish our own schools. And it was when it was time for us to enter school, we had teachers who were Jewish who had been fired from their positions because the Nazis did not want Jewish teachers to be teaching Aryan children. And so we entered the Jewish schools when we did. When we came out of those schools, the children who were outside, the German children, all knew that the children coming from the school were Jewish, and they chase us. They throw rocks at us and be very, they would curse us in many different ways, you know, rotten Jews, dirty Jews, whatever they could say. And my brother and I became very, very good at running, which was helpful in later years.
You were never tempted to fight back or go after them, or were you?
Well, tempted, no. We just wanted to get out of the way. We didn't want to be assaulted.
And we're going to continue that story when we come back. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. Alfred Schnoge is with us today, telling his story of his family's ultimate escape from Nazi Germany and the beginning of his life here in the United States. When we come back from this break, we'll hear about the moment his family reached the border with Holland. And we'll take some of your questions. You can reach us during this live Wednesday discussion at 910-343-1138 or at coastline at whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. We're talking today with Alfred Schnoge about his childhood in Nazi Germany, and we're just about to get to his family's harrowing escape into Holland and how the experiences of that part of German history has shaped his life and his thinking in the United States. If you have your own question for Alfred Schnoge, you can reach us on this Wednesday, the eve of Holocaust Remembrance Day, by calling us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline at whqr.org. And Alfred Schnoge, just before we went to break, you were talking about how you and your brother learned to run really well after being chased by Aryan children of the Nazis who would throw stones at you. When you think back to that time, leading up to Kristallnacht, how much do you think your parents tried to shelter you from their deepest fears about what was happening?
Well, they didn't try to shelter us, but we knew that if we just lived a low life, not revealed who we were, that people wouldn't really know. So we had relatively easy lives. But we were cautioned. For instance, let me give you an example. There were many fine castles along the Rhine River which you could visit. And we pestered our parents that we would like to go and see them. And we finally broke them down. They were reluctant to go because the Germans had that sign on there, Juden sind hier unerwünscht.
Which, tell us again, means?
Which means Jews here are not wanted. Mm-hmm. And so finally we broke down their resistance, and they cautioned us. They said, boys, we don't want to cause embarrassment, so when you go, don't say that you're Jewish, obviously, and when you go to the latrine, cover yourself, because if they see that you've been circumcised, they will know that you're Jewish, and you may be thrown out, and who knows, we may be arrested. We don't know what will happen. So we were pretty well coached by our parents how to behave in that situation, how to stay undercover. And there were other instances. There were instances where we used to go to a beach in Germany, where we in the Rhine River, where we used to go during the week with my mother. And we had been going there, and when one day we showed up there, and that same sign was posted at the entrance there. And my mother said, "Oh, madam, we've been coming here for many months. What does this mean? You know, we are Jewish." And the person said, "Oh, you know, this isn't meant for you. I know you. You can come in. Please bring your children. But don't tell anybody that you're Jewish." This is the kind of thing that we lived with daily. So we knew that we had to remain undercover and had to be cautious, but we still could continue or do the things that most others did.
There was a day in school when some Nazi soldiers came to your class and they started reading off names. Tell us about that.
Yes, it's correct. One day during our school day, there were two men in leather coats and black boots came in, and they announced the names of two of our fellow pupils, fellow students, and they said, "We are taking you out of school. You're coming with us, and we will take you to your parents and your parents, and you will be taken by us." Well, as children, we were flabbergasted that anybody could come in and literally arrest two of our pupils. And when we came home, we explained what had happened to our parents, and they had made it clear that what is going on in Germany was that there were many Polish families who had immigrated from Poland to Germany, and they were hoping to make a life there or perhaps escape from Germany to some other country, because in Poland there was a great deal of anti-Semitism as well. And the Germans certainly didn't want any immigrants from Poland in Germany, particularly if they were Jewish, and they were going around arresting them and sending them back to Poland, perhaps to the concentration camps. I don't know that. But these children were children of such parents, and they rounded up these immigrants and sent them back home. An immigration policy which was pretty severe. They didn't want anyone to come in that would spoil the Aryan supremacy that existed in Germany.
Do you remember as a child first learning about concentration camps and what they were?
Yes, I do, because people were arrested, and we learned that where they were kept. Some went to in Czechoslovakia to
Theresienstadt.
And then when they were treated brutally, but usually came back in 2 or 3 weeks or 4 weeks, they were released. And from obviously what they told us about what went on there, we knew that this was not a nice place to be, because they were under the Gestapo, they're being severely questioned. We learned all this from our parents. And my parents used to have a they used to invite their family and guests to come over in the afternoons and have some coffee and cake. And during that time, we were encouraged to be with the adults and listen to their conversation. So from that conversation, we understood and we heard what was going on. We also learned that many people who had lost their jobs and couldn't tend to their families, who couldn't make a living for their families, decided to commit suicide. And it's the first time in our lives as 5-6-year-olds that we learned about suicide, that people would be willing to take their lives. And
at some point, the Nazis seized your family's, your father's business. And they allowed him to keep working there so that he could teach them how to run that business. Do you remember that happening and what that was like for your family?
Yes, I do remember that. The Nazis confiscated the business my father worked in. The business was owned by a Jewish family. and they were in the business of selling strategic materials, metals and ores, which were really needed by the German military and industrial establishment. And when they confiscated that business, they needed to learn how to continue the business. So they insisted that my father and his colleagues, all of whom were Jewish, would remain there until they taught them how to conduct that business. And my father knew that it was just a matter of time, because once they knew something about that business and how to conduct it, it would be, he would be fired. He would no longer be able to work there. So my parents started very early on, and when he was in that position, looking for a place to go, to immigrate, to get out of Germany. And they looked wherever they could. My mother was an ardent Zionist. She would have loved to have gone to what is now Israel, but that border was completely closed because it was under a mandate of the Great Britain, and they would not allow immigrants to come in to that country. There were very few people, very few countries around the world that would accept Jews. Actually, they held a conference.
Evian.
In Evian, yes.
And that's Evian, Anita Snoeg's voice you're hearing, right, by the way. Go ahead.
And they told all those people at the Evian conference, come on, take as many Jews as you want. We're happy to let them out if you give them a visa. And there were very few who accepted. There were some who accepted a few Jews. There was one country which was quite remarkable, small country of the Dominican Republic, took about 100,000 Jews, which is amazing, absolutely amazing that they did so. And
so it was when the Nazis confiscated your father's business that your parents really started planning, all right, we need to get out.
Exactly.
Do you remember, so they figured out that Holland was a place they could go because there was an office.
That's correct.
Connected to your father's company in Holland.
That's correct. We had an office in Holland, and my father was very well known to them, and he asked them, if I can get out of Germany, would you be able to employ me? And they said, sure, if you can bring your family out and come, why, we'd be happy to have you here. But getting a visa to go there was almost impossible. But still, he knew that he had a place to go if he could get out of Germany.
Do you remember what made your parents say, tonight's the night? Was there a defining moment, or had they just, no, had the plan just reached fruition?
It was just coincidental. There was an opportunity that he had to visit Holland on business, and he told his superiors there, at that time they were Nazis, that he was going to take his family, and while he was on business, we were going to be there for a vacation, a week of vacation before we came back. And so my parents said, this is the opportunity we have to get out of Germany. Let's take it. And they made arrangements for us to leave Germany on November 10th. Just coincidentally, that date
so
came
that
up.
Was a coincidence, and that was the same night you checked into a hotel.
The 9th.
On the November 9th, because we had no furniture left in our apartment, we had to get out of our apartment. We moved to the Dome Hotel, which was situated right next to the Dome Cathedral, and we were very excited to be going to Holland for a vacation, and obviously my parents were happy to get out, and they were anxious to get out. And my brother and I had a difficult time falling asleep that night in the hotel. My parents put us to bed. And we had just fallen asleep when our parents came and woke us up. And they said, boys, come with us. And they took us to the window of the hotel. The window was covered with drapes, and they put us between the opening of the drapes in the window, and we looked outside, and what we saw is almost indescribable. There were SA stormtroopers marching down the street. There were Nazi youths walking down the street. They were picking up rocks, throwing them into the store windows of the stores that were on the street. And these were all high-end shopping streets, the kind that you can imagine would be a Madison Avenue in New York. And when they broke the store windows, they stepped in, and these were, a lot of them are Jewish stores, and these were the stores that they broke the windows of. They stepped into the store, they gathered up whatever merchandise they could see, they threw it out, and I remember as it was tossed out, it would shatter. For instance, the china would shatter on the cobblestone streets in front of the store, and all the crystals and things like that were just thrown out. And while they were doing it, they were shouting gleefully about how they, about the nasty Jews, the dirty Jews, and this serves you right, and they were marching up and down that street. And
how did you feel watching this?
Well, we were amazed, you know, why would anybody be destroying such property? And it just didn't make any sense to us.
Were you afraid at that point that you might not get out of Germany?
No, we weren't afraid. Fearful. We just couldn't understand what was happening. Our parents tapped us on our shoulder while we were standing there. And they said, boys, never forget what you see here tonight. And I'll tell you, 80 years ago, I haven't forgotten it. The whole site, everything is there. It's as vivid as if it happened yesterday. And
the next morning,
my father called up my grandfather and said, we're going to leave this morning on a train is leaving. And the train station was just opposite the cathedral, so it wasn't very far. And my grandfather said, you are still here? Take your boys and your family. Get out immediately, you know. They've burned the synagogue here in Deutz. Deutz was a community adjacent to Cologne. And they are raiding our homes and tearing, the Nazis are coming in and destroying the furniture of our neighbors and throwing things out on the street. Please get out and get out as quickly as you can. And that was a surprise, that this was going on not just in Cologne, but it was happening in other parts of Germany.
And this was also your grandfather's synagogue?
Yes, it was.
That he was talking about. It's burned down.
Right, and we used to go there weekly to visit with them. In fact, we had I have to go back a little bit, but we used to go visit and go across the Hohenzollern Bridge in Cologne that went over to Deutz, and there was one adventure that we had, or what I now recognize was rather important in our lives. When we were crossing that bridge, my father once stopped his car, and he had a pistol, and he took the pistol out of his pocket, and he disassembled it, and he stepped out of the car and threw the pieces into the Rhine River. And we asked my father, why was he doing this? You know, a pistol, my brother and I could have played with that if he didn't want it anymore. Why did he throw it away? And my father told us that the Gestapo had ordered that Jews could not own firearms or weapons and had to be turned into a Gestapo. That's why he was getting rid of it. And now, you know, looking back at that, it was a lesson that he taught us, and one that I understood, that my father was going to resist the Nazis, which I didn't understand at that time, but which, in retrospect, as I look back at it, that was the moment that we first realized that my parents were going to resist the Nazis.
You boarded a train the morning after Kristallnacht and headed for the border, the German border with
Correct.
Holland.
That's correct.
And you encountered some Nazi officers at the border. You had your papers. You were set to go across to your father's office in Holland. You had that was all laid out, the plans. You were ready to go, and then they stopped you.
That is correct. They boarded the train that we were on because the Nazis had sealed the borders with all neighboring countries. And when they boarded the train, they asked to see our passports. And we had a passport. We didn't have any visas to go anywhere, but we had a passport. And the passports were all marked, of the Jews, were all marked with a letter, a red letter J. And so they separated the Jews in the train and took all the Jews off the train and marched us to a local jail right near the Dutch border. And there we were incarcerated in a jail cell with about 20 or so of the other Jews that were on the train. And that was an experience which was something that we didn't expect. And it was stressful, I suppose. That jail cell had no furnishings. All it had was a commode, and it was embarrassing for my brother and I to relieve ourselves in that jail cell and that one commode. But the passengers who were with us were kind enough to take off their coats and shield us if we had to relieve ourselves.
And we're going to have to finish this story when we come back from the break. Okay. You did eventually make it across the border, but took a little bit. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. Alfred Schnoog, born in Cologne, Germany in 1931, is sharing the story of his family's escape from the Nazis in 1938 and how that part of his childhood shaped his life. And we're taking your questions on this Wednesday. When we come back from this break, you can reach us at either 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today we mark the eve of Holocaust Remembrance Day by hearing the story of one man who escaped from Nazi Germany when he was only 7 years old with his family. Alfred Schnoog remembers Kristallnacht and the embedded anti-Semitism in German culture. You can ask your own question on this Wednesday by calling us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And we do have a few questions and comments that I'd like to get to. But first, we left the last break in a jail cell at the border of Germany and Holland. How did you get out of that jail cell?
Well, we were questioned. All the passengers were questioned. And those who had visas to get out of the country, out of Germany, they let them go. And my father was able to persuade them that he was in business, and he was going on business to Amsterdam. And they, after checking whether that story was true, they led us to the border. When we got to the border, we spent about an hour or two waiting for the customs inspectors, the German customs inspectors, to go through our clothing and our baggage to make sure that we weren't taking any contraband out of Germany, which was strictly prohibited. And when that was done, we were waiting to cross, and we were standing there with two German policemen or Gestapo. They were all dressed in black with boots up to their knees. And one of them looked at my parents and they said, "You may go, but your children, we're going to take them and take them to a camp nearby. And when you come back, you can collect them there." Well, my brother and I were shocked to hear that.
You're 7 years old.
But we were going on vacation with my parents, and we were frightened to be separated from them. And we started to cry, And we were clearly distressed and upset. And my mother was very upset. And she looked at the Nazis, and she was accustomed to carrying with her in her purse a small paring knife, which she used to peel apples, which was pretty customary in Europe at the time, to peel the fruit that they took along. And she said to them, "My children are coming with us, and if you try to stop them, I'm going to cut their throats, and then I'm going to cut my throat." Well, there was a few moments of silence. I don't know how long it lasted. My brother, I know what my feelings were. I just wanted to be with my parents. I don't think that the thought ever occurred to me that my mother would actually cut our throats and kill us. That just thought never entered my mind.
You knew she was bluffing for the sake of the Nazis.
I'm not sure that she was bluffing.
You don't know that
she was. I think she was downright serious, but
if the Nazis had tried to take the two of you,
there was no doubt in my mind
she would have killed you.
There's no question about it. There were so many Jews who would rather sacrifice their children rather than have them live in Nazi Germany. And then they would, and some did, as they committed suicide, some of the families did. So, and we had heard all that, but it didn't occur to me at that moment that she would do it at that moment. And finally, one of the Nazis said to my parents, "Take your brats and get out of here." Now, when I look back at it, that was the moment of my mother's resistance against the Nazis. And I'm very proud of her for doing so, because if it hadn't happened, I wouldn't be here today, and my grandchildren wouldn't be here today. My life would be very different if there would have been a life.
Your mother was a deeply courageous woman.
Tremendously. You know, I can only see it in retrospect, how anybody could have done that. I was 7 years old. I couldn't see it in the broader sense of what was going on. But I sure know it now, and I know what happened. So
now we're going to get to you lived in Holland for about a year and a half and then went to London before you sailed aboard the Britannic.
That's correct.
To the United States. But first, I'm getting a lot of questions from people who are asking different variations of essentially the same question. And I think it's important that we address this. Mark from Wilmington called and asked, "Does Mr. Snoke think there are any parallels between the current administration's tone in regards to immigrants and what he experienced in Nazi Germany?" We got a question from David who writes, "Please ask Mr. Snoke if he sees parallels between the 1930s in Germany and the Trump era as it relates to fascism." Judson writes, "Do you see anything that would be similar in America today with the rise of the alt-right and white supremacists that seem so different variations on parallels today? What do you have? Because you have a very strong opinion about that."
I have a very strong opinion. There are no parallels. And I want to emphasize that. Germany, under the Nazi regime, was a dictatorship ruled by one man who had control of everything. We are living in a country that is ruled by the laws of the of our country, the Constitution, its Bill of Rights, and that is supreme here. And it is the laws of this country that keep us free and safe and make our lives tolerable and livable. We don't commit crimes against other religious groups. That doesn't happen here. There are people who are anti-Semitic. There always will be, I suppose. There are people who hate other races, and I suppose that will continue to be the case every now and then. But we have laws that protect us, and this country has had that protection since its inception. And there is no comparison. And I don't care who the president is, and You cannot draw that difference. Now, the immigration issue, likewise, it's the same thing. We have laws that govern us, and our Congress makes the laws of immigration, and they are followed, and that's that. In Germany, this didn't happen. The Gestapo is what ruled, and that was it. So don't try even to put the two together. It just doesn't happen.
Anita Schnoke, far more concerning, you say, is what's happening in Europe.
Yes, anti-Semitism, which never disappeared, is on the rise again. We've made several trips to Europe, and we've heard it from many people. We did a Danube River cruise, and we had the opportunity to take several tours into Jewish communities. And we were told by the president of the synagogue in Budapest, which was one of the stops that we made, that anti-Semitism in Budapest was on the rise. It's also on the rise in Austria. And there are particular problems in France. An 85-year-old Holocaust survivor was murdered and burned there just last week. And that is not the first case of that kind of anti-Semitic murder in France. I would encourage people to attend the Wilmington Jewish Film Festival at the end of this month and watch some of the Holocaust films to see what is going on. But if there is something that it needs fighting against, it's anti-Semitism that is spreading throughout the world.
We have a question from Shirley, who writes, I grew up in Omaha with neighbors who had been in the camps. They absolutely refused to talk about it, hid the tattooed numbers on their arms, told their kids to be quiet as well. Were they warned not to talk about their experience, she asks.
My guess is no, they weren't warned. Mm-hmm. I think they're just unable to do so. And they don't want their children to have to relive what they went through. I've heard many stories similar to that, and it's very difficult for parents to, elderly parents who went through these things, to have their children understand everything that happened. I'm very sorry about that, because I think the children are good spokespersons for their grandparents or for the people who went through this. And I wish that they had spoken to them about it and said to them, I'd like to relate those stories, because people have to learn that. And of course, that's what I'm doing.
And Shirley actually continues. She says, I've always felt America might have gone a different direction with later genocides in other countries if they had spoken up and educated all of us. She says, I was in seventh grade the first time I saw the photos in Life magazine of the camp victims. Those images have always haunted me.
I can understand that. And she's absolutely right, what she says. And there have been so many other genocides. Now, whether we could have made a difference in the other genocides, I don't know whether that's possible. And it may not have been possible, but we certainly would understand it better. We understand the world better. And it's so important for people to know what happened in those years. So that.
And can you articulate why? I know it seems obvious to some people, but why do we have Holocaust Remembrance Day? What is it about understanding this part of human history? What about remembering that changes today for us?
Well, it's very important that we know how these things occur and how they began, so that we can know these things and we can understand the horrors that people are going through around the world. And there are many places there right now. I'm thinking about what happened in Burma, for instance, with the Muslims that have been thrown out, gone over to Bangladesh, and being tortured again when they try to go home. Our understanding of that is what is so important. this world is not such a lovely, great place. And by understanding what is happening around the world, we would understand better how lucky and how fortunate we are to live in this country, where we are ruled by the laws of our Constitution and our, and I mean, that is so important. So it's part of our, it's part of history that needs to be told and retold, so that we understand that we are in a special nation.
Now, of course, here we are with only about 3 minutes left. And your story, Mr. Chenault, is probably going to take several editions to fully tell. But can you just tell us then, you're aboard the Britannic, you're sailing for the United States. Were you afraid at that point, or was your family breathing a sigh of relief?
We were not afraid at that time. We were excited as a child coming to the United States, seeing the skyscrapers we had learned so much about, seeing the Statue of Liberty, which we heard a lot about. And then we arrived in the United States. It was great. I was one of the lucky ones who didn't get caught up in the horrors of the Holocaust, escaping just as the door closed behind us. So that was the feeling and how I think of arriving here.
But your grandparents and your aunts weren't so lucky.
No, they weren't. We learned shortly after the Nazis, we actually learned in 1942 after the quite some time after that, that they had been taken to Westerbork and from there put on a train to Sobibor, where they were gassed and lost their lives.
I'm so sorry. You got out of Holland shortly before Holland.
Yes. We got out of Holland. We arrived in the United States on April 1st, 1940. And 30 days thereafter, 35 days thereafter, the Nazis broke Holland's neutrality and invaded that country. And that was the end for, or hope for, all the Jews that lived there. And they were soon arrested in Holland and taken away to the concentration camps. And escape then became impossible. So we were really lucky to get out.
And you learned English once you arrived on American soil.
Yeah. It was interesting. We knew nothing of English. We spoke Dutch and we spoke German. My parents sent us to a camp in the Catskills. The name of the camp was the Surprise Lake Camp. And I have to tell you, after I married Anita, she told me that she had also gone to that camp, and it was just amazing. But of course, she didn't go at the time that I went, but thereafter. So coincidences always happen. Yeah. But after 3 weeks being in that camp, my parents came to visit us, and they spoke to my counselor, and they looked at my counselor and said, "You know, how the boy's doing?" And the counselor said, "Well, what do you mean, how are they doing? They're doing really well." He said, "But they don't speak English." And the counselor said, "Madam," I said, "you misunderstand. They speak English better than you do because they have no accent. And they get along fine with the bunkmates." Well, we had learned the language in those 3 weeks without
That's this edition of Coastline. Alfred Chenault, Anita Chenault, thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Rachel,
for having us.
Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Caitlin Hanrahan is our production manager. Caroline DeVries is our webmaster. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org. Get the podcast. You can find it on the WHQR app or tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 3. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.